in, go into roll call?
We don't have to.
We don't have to get it for planning?
Yes.
Oh, for planning, maybe?
Yes.
Start with planning?
Planning, okay.
I'll call the roll for the planning commission. Commissioner Caven?
Present.
Commissioner Waco is excused. Commissioner Borer?
Here.
Commissioner Kikau?
Here.
Commissioner Fraser is excused. Commissioner Yu?
With that.
Commissioner Udama?
Here.
Commissioner Gabei?
Present.
Commissioner Turner?
Turner. Present.
For the city? For the council.
Yeah, for the council. Okay, Councilmember Erickson?
Present.
Councilmember Morrison?
Present.
Mayor Winston?
Present.
Councilmember Tran?
Present.
Councilmember Lee?
Here.
Councilmember Klonowski?
She will not be here.
You have a call.
Thank you. Before I turn it over, thank you to our planning commissioners for coming here. I know you already signed up for work, but now you seem to have signed up for more work, so I appreciate you guys doing that, but this is incredibly important. I think if we get this right, you know, we create some big value for our city 20, 25, 50 years down the road. So thank you guys for being a part of this. So without further ado.
Thank you, Mayor Winston, and City Council members and Planning Commission members. It's been a month since we last gathered in this work session format to talk about the 610 corridor development study. A lot has happened in the time since that last meeting. And we've got updates tonight on three topics. One, I want to go through a summary of the engagement that has taken place since our last meeting. Two, we've got some brief updates to the models that our consultant NEO has done in response to the feedback from you that we talked through a month ago, as well as public engagement. And then I want to talk through the current thinking that staff has on an approach to amending the comprehensive plan to be responsive to this work and the goals that the council has related to the moratorium. So there's a lot of content here. I will go through some of it pretty quickly just for the sake of time, but I'm happy to slow down and discuss anything along the way if that's helpful. So, starting with the engagement, this is a summary that NEO Partners put together for us. We've got a few slides here that summarize the work. In the packet for tonight, there is a full summary that includes all the summary information, as well as all of the verbatim responses that we heard from folks both at the open house, as well as on the online survey. And this also includes a summary of the discussion that we had here at the work session a month ago. It's all three of those components. The open house had about 30 people signing in. I would say there are 40 or 50 people when you count for people coming in pairs and threes. This was at the library on the 26th, all day long until 7 p.m. We also had an online video that introduced the three models and talked about the goals of the study that at the time of this packet had received 500 views. And then the video led into an online survey, and we had 259 responses to that survey. So a pretty good response. So summarizing the themes that came out of each of those three venues, first on the joint session that we held here, some of the key themes are certainly a shared desire to move toward the medium and high density models. A lot of comments about adding retail to that, a lot of desire for retail, wanting to keep money within the city and you know, make this a destination for residents rather than having to go other places. Some other feedback we received here was considering the relationship between population density and more amenities. In other words, the more population you have, the more amenities become feasible. And then a desire to actively engage with desired businesses rather than simply waiting around to see who locates here. Some of the concerns and challenges raised at that meeting with the higher density development models, public safety and the city's reputation came up, heard about traffic, And also the ability for the city to ensure the projects developed will be long-term assets, so in terms of the quality of design, the construction, property management, and so on. And then some of the key wants or desires that were raised with the higher density development models here in the joint session. Feedback was that both of those higher density models were economically appealing, for sure. Feedback to incorporate additional uses like hotels, restaurants, medical facilities, and additional amenities to attract residents and investment. Wanted to make sure we understand the impact of high and medium density models on the city's population and the overall goal here of closing the tax base gap with other cities. An acknowledgement of the truth that there's a need for more housing due to the regional housing shortage in the Twin Cities area. And a suggestion that when we engage on this work, that we do so by trying to tie the outcomes here to the Brooklyn Park 2025 goals, which is indeed what we did at the open house. The consultants and I walked the attendees through. It was an open house format all day long. We had boards with the models up for people to peruse and ask questions of staff and consultants, and then twice during the day we did formal presentations to walk people through the content and did a large group Q&A for each of those sessions. And so we asked folks, what does the development area need more of, what does it need less of, what are some of the amenities that you'd like there in terms of connectivity and pedestrian amenities. What are the elements that make you excited about living in this area? What activities would you like to engage in? And then importantly, as I mentioned, how can development help support the city's broader 2025 community goals? Some of the themes that came out of those questions and the answers that we received to them, again, not surprising, desire for destination retail. We heard some feedback about less industrial and warehouse uses going up. At the open house, we heard there was a general sentiment that more housing is needed, as well as more gathering places for and recreation and trails and scenic views, et cetera. And again, people with questions about traffic. Okay, so we had the video. Again, I mentioned that this was viewed 500 times. If you'd like to watch it on your own time, you can just Google the 610 Corridor Public Engagement or 610 Corridor Development Study, and it'll come right up. It's on YouTube, and it's linked from the city's website. And then, as I mentioned, that led to a SurveyMonkey, an online survey that was available for folks to take between July 5th and July 14th, that asked similar questions to what we asked at the open house. So some of the key themes that came out of the online survey: people are excited about green space and retail, entertainment options, shopping and dining, nature, recreation. In terms of pedestrian amenities, there seemed to be a lot of buy-in for the walkable components of these models, people placing a lot of importance on things like wide sidewalks and street crossings, bike lanes, and so on, as well as trees and green spaces. And then other key themes out of that survey, there's a question about what do you want more of, what do you want less of. People for more, so they want more retail, more public gathering and programming, green spaces, and more affordable housing. There was a theme in the online survey that was a little bit different from the in-person open house of actually people wanting less housing and office because of traffic and safety concerns. Again, public safety concerns associated with higher density rental housing, and a desire for retail with lots of public amenities and sustainability, and an acknowledgement that can help support the 2025 goals. As I mentioned, in your packet, there is a detailed report back with the answers to all these questions. So I'm not going to go through all of them, but just an example. This is what the responses looked like on the online survey of that question of what does the development area need more of, with retail and green space topping off that list. And then this is what it looked like for what does the development area need less of, just over half saying less housing, a little less than half saying less office. Just kind of summarizing all the feedback from all three pieces, the joint work session, the in-person open house, and the online survey, desire for destination retail and entertainment, traffic again, public safety concerns with multifamily housing, connectivity and public gathering spaces and programming, and just really, this last one, I could really sense this from the conversations we were having at the open house, a lot of general buy-in on this whole idea of let's use development to help increase the tax base and alleviate the property tax burden on homeowners. So that's what we have for the summary of engagement. This might be a good place just to pause before we move on to the next topic to see if there's any questions or discussion.
Go ahead.
I have a question. In your presentation thus far and the slides that you presented to us, with such a vision, an idea put together and considered, I don't see anything here about movability via transportation. Mm-hmm. Transportation is omitted. How will people get to those places to do any of those things to participate when I don't see any transportation?
Mayor Winston, Councilmember Borson, I appreciate that question. I think if you look at the detailed responses in the packet where you see we put every single verbatim response that we heard from people, you will see some of that. Certainly the open house, there were discussions about, you know, once LRT is open, making sure that those east-west connections are there with the Oak Grove, the future Oak Grove station. There were folks talking about bike connections to their surrounding neighborhoods. In my recollection of the discussions, that was an important topic that people were thinking about and wanted to make sure that development that does happen in this area has those non-motorized connections in mind, in addition to the vehicular traffic concerns.
What was that conversation included? Buses?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
In the time since we met last, we've asked the consultants to make a couple of updates to the model work based on the discussions that we had here, which I will walk through briefly now. Model one, the high density model, is unchanged from what you saw last month, with a slight change of just this view was a little different. The substance is the same. So this is looking from the southwest, just to make it a little easier to see that. There it is. Okay, makes it a little easier to see where the retail is on the ground level of the buildings, especially as it lines Xylon here. But the substance is the same. So still that height range of 4 to 7 stories. With most of them being 7 stories. The same inspiration here from Excelsior and Grand and the Alatas proposal in Brooklyn Center. What's new is that we asked NEO to put together a model that is in between the high density and the medium density model that we're properly calling the medium high density model. How this differs from the high density model is that the mixed use buildings, those that have retail at the bottom and housing above, those are the same. Those are still 7 stories total. But all of the other residential only buildings that in the high density model are 7 stories are 5 stories in this model. Okay. It was some stepping down back on the EDA properties back here. Other than that, the fundamentals are basically the same from the high density model with a focus on structured parking rather than service parking, although there is some service, as you can see, in the same general layout with the same assumptions about the layout, providing that part in the middle. We will see later on how that stacks up in terms of the numbers. We have that same summary slide, same summary table showing all the numbers for the various models, and you'll see how that stacks up. Okay, and then the medium density model is the same as it was before. Again, here just changing the perspective, looking from the southwest, a range of 1 to 5 stories on this one, with more of a focus on surface parking, less structured parking. Something else that is new that we asked them to put together is there was a question at the joint work session in June, I believe, from Councilmember Klonowski about, can we see what happens with the numbers if we do a model that has more retail and less housing? And so we actually have this existing small area plan that was done in 2017 for this area that was basically just that. It differs from what's currently in the comprehensive plan in that more of the so-called Meyer land is shown as retail, because at that time that was Meyer's plan, was to put a Meyer grocery store there, and there's less land devoted to housing. So this is kind of a modified version of the business as usual model that you saw last time. And again, you'll see how that stacks up in the summary table in just a moment. Okay, and then we still have the business as usual model, which is the same one you saw last time. This reflects what a potential build out of the current comprehensive plan guidance would look like with a range of 1 to 2 stories, more service parking, less structured parking. Okay.
Walt?
Yes.
Site L, what are those structures that are shown there? Yep.
On the business as usual.
Yeah. On model 3B.
Yep. Right. Those are townhomes essentially.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Or multi 2 to 3 story or 2 story townhomes. Okay. So this is going to be tough to read on the screen, but it is in the printout in front of you on page 30, thank you. So all of the numbers in this apples to apples comparison for the model 1 and the high density model 2, the medium density model, and model 3B, the 2040 comprehensive plan model, are the same numbers that you saw last time. Those are unchanged. Okay, so what's new here is the column to show the hybrid model, the 1.5, and the model 3A with the 2017 small area plan. So looking first at the hybrid model, that second column there, you'll see, as you might expect, that everything falls pretty much between the high density and medium density model. So reminder here, we're talking, instead of 7 stories for most of the site, it's 5 stories for the bulk of the site, and the mixed-use buildings are 7 still, okay? So that brings the number of housing units down from nearly 5,000 to about 3,300. It brings the total development cost down, quite a bit. It, of course, then brings the subsidy down. It's still a lot. But it's less than in Model 1, topping at about nearly $100 million for that model. And then both the property tax revenue to the city and the value per acre are just about halfway between the high density and the medium density models, as you might expect. And then looking then at the Model 3A, the 2017 small area plan model. Again, this is the one where we're showing a little more retail than the comp plan certainly currently shows and a little less housing. That brings everything down. If you look at the bottom line, the value per acre and the annual property tax revenue to the city, it's a bit lower even than the status quo than the businesses usually. Okay, I'll pause there again. This is kind of a lot to digest and to see if there's any questions or comments about this.
Question, the annual property tax on all five of these, how are we determining that? Why is 1.19 million in Ottawa? 3 or 4 is 1 million.
So it's starting with the total value, you know, and the value is an estimate, but a total value of the development in that model. You know, and that's derived from the expertise of our consultants. You know, they are development consultants. They have tools available to them to be able to estimate, you know, what's it going to cost to build it, what's the land cost, and what is the ultimate resultant value of these developments. So you take that total value, and then just apply the same math that that the assessor applies to, you know, existing real life properties in the city, and that's what gets you the annual property tax revenue to the city.
Is this realistic though? Yeah, we can go for model one because it's you make the most money, but will it really happen?
Right. That's the question, right? And I think both the consultants and staff agree that, you know, the more, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in a few minutes with a slide on trade-offs, but, you know, the higher our expectations, the more likely it is that we're going to have to wait for the marketplace to catch up with those expectations, as well as the more subsidy that will be required to support, you know, the necessary parking infrastructure and other things to support that development. So that is the key question here. I have more to say about that and more questions to give that in a moment.
So two things come to mind. One is there a number of population estimates? In terms of, like, if we go with model one, how many more people are we probably expecting? I mean, not saying every unit is like full, but maybe what, 80%, you know, capacity?
Yeah, consequently, we don't have that in this table. I mean, you can do some kind of quick mental math. You know, if you think about, you know, household, if you put household size at 2 or so, you know, you can kind of play that out. And that, you know, that leads to, and that's work that we will have to do as staff to a certain degree when we get to the point of actually amending the comprehensive plan. We will work with the Metropolitan Council staff to likely amend the city's population and household estimates for this area in particular, which will then affect that for the city as a whole. And, you know, I think I mentioned last time, you know, to Commissioner Keekhout's point about, is this realistic? You know, there is a limit, right? So, like, Model 1 at 4,900 housing units, that would just about take care of the city's population forecast for the whole city out to 2040, right on these 43 acres. Okay, so it's a lot of development and probably not likely to happen at this intensity, at quite that high intensity. It's not, you know, it physically works, so it's not that it's impossible. From a market standpoint, given what we know right now, it's not super likely to play out that way. But again, this is over a long period of time. So
what makes me think about is the garbage situation, right? That was a big conversation over at Excelsior,
yeah.
Right? In terms of how to best incorporate that, and pick up, you know, and like storage and accessibility and all that stuff, right? And then also the other thing is pedestrian friendliness, right? because I'm also concerned about just the ease of access and not overpopulating the amenities, you know, because we also want to draw people in. So there has to be, I think, consideration around foot traffic. And then quick question too, these are projected roads, right, that are cutting through this main area.
Yeah, I mean, a word about, Councilmember Lee, a word about those roads. You know, those are in the model for the purposes of determining a reasonable amount of developable land. Because obviously you're not going to be building buildings over the streets, okay? This is not to say this is where the streets should be and that they should be laid out this way. You know, it'll be something different from this.
Okay.
It's more to illustrate that we can have some reasonable development purposes.
Yeah, because I think what I'd love to be able to do in terms of pedestrian friendliness and bike friendliness is to actually create like a greenway that can run the course. So, I mean, just taking a look at, you know, one of these, maybe the road coming down from Rush Creek, you know, that connects to some of these access points up by Xenia in the northern part, right? So that,
right,
this one main road that runs right down past the park, past the pond, down to the southern part. I mean, that could be just be like a green corridor, like no street, right? Just a lot of maybe some retail. So there could be, maybe there's some red at the bottom there, but maybe there's some, you know, along the way as well. So that's my thought as well. To be able to accentuate sidewalks, walking, and connecting the park in the middle with the trail around the larger pond and kind of north and south, you know, access. So some of my thoughts are off of that, but yeah.
What?
Sorry, Maggie was.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You know, what strikes me is the percentage of people that put green space, scenic, you know, more public area than when we first talked. It was all about tax reduction and density and growing to be the Maple Grove of the, you know, up here. But I think we need to listen to that a little bit about, you know, a lot of people move to this area because it has a river and because it's had that feature. And I'm concerned that we build, I've said this from the start, you know, to build on every piece of land without focusing a little bit more on the green space. I know we have great parks, but I'm a little bit, you know, pleasantly surprised at how many other citizens commented on that.
Yeah, we definitely heard that a lot. In fact, one of the comments that I remember stuck on my mind from the conversations at the open house was, you know, before we had a different view of this, and somebody, a few people I think were saying, you know, that green space is kind of isolated and doesn't feel welcoming, it doesn't feel like a place that people who don't live here would be welcome to go to, and that certainly wasn't the intent. So one thing we just shifted this so you can see that the intent is actually to connect it up here to the pond trail system, as Councilmember Lee was talking about. But also, you know, again, to reiterate, this is not an actual proposed design. You know, that's something that comes later. So, you know, we can take that feedback and the importance that people are placing on green space and, you know, carry that forward actually to the regulatory part of this. You know, when we change the zoning, we can have requirements for those types of things. That's coming only just a couple of months down the road. We've got a fair amount of work to get there, but that's something that will be top of mind when we do that work.
So I know before you talk, I will say that there will be some difficult decisions when this is made, because people are going to ask for a ton of green space, and I like green space myself. What I will say is that maybe not in this survey, I think it was reflected in the survey to an extent, people do consistently talk about these property taxes, but they also talk about public safety. over and over and over, and rightfully so, because that is the first priority of government. The issue is that if you look at our current budget, public safety takes up an outsized portion compared to similar-sized cities, not just in Minnesota, but in other states. So it's extrapolating how we're going to pay for that long-term. And so there's going to have to be some decisions in terms of getting to the revenue that we need to be able to afford the police department long-term, because it's not healthy to have a police department that is taking up not just police, but public safety, right? Fire and police. That ends up taking 50, 60, 70, if we continue with some, you know, with some trends. That's not sustainable long-term to a city that has safe parks and healthy spaces and all that. So, you know, it just, there's going to be some difficult trade-offs and decisions, which is, you know, why we're here. It's why folks get elected. It's why folks get appointed, right, to make those decisions. But I just want to bear that in mind, because I'm very much for the green spaces, and I'm also looking at the budget. And part of the reason the council put this moratorium in place was because we knew that one of the things we knew when we first came in was that we were facing these future revenue issues. And so the easiest way to fix that is going to be making sure that things are zoned correctly and that the land we own is developed correctly. Because if we botch that, then we're dealing with a whole other set of issues in terms of being able to afford basic services. So I just want to get that out there. Kristen.
I want to say I look at this survey, and I look at it in two ways. You know, people answer questions at home, maybe influenced by things other than what they really mean. So we have to look at it that way. None of us go to Maple Grove to go look at green space. We go to shop. We go to wedding pools. We go to, you know, every other thing, you know, except green space. Why? Because we have an abundance of green space already here. So what we've been talking about since we've been here is a lack of welcoming retail, high-end retail space. You know, a place that we can gather, a place that we can call our own, you know, have like a grave or something like that, you know. So in that sense, I like this because it offers both. It does not ignore green space, but it should not make that an emphasis. When we subtract everything else, you know, we can have both. But I like the model one because to me it encompasses everything. We have that green space because we know we can look at, and we have almost a downtown feel that we lack in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn Park.
I'm still kind of new here. I've only been here for a couple of years. I apologize. Brooklyn Park. I think we lack that, and I think it's time we kind of make up for that a little bit, so that our money stays here, not in Maple Grove, not in St. Louis Park. We really need to start spending money at home. And I think I like that.
Nick?
So I might, my first comment here, you might hurt me for this, but you know, when Henry Ford first invented the Model T and asked the people, what would you like? They would have said, a faster horse. Because innovation and, you know, people just can't see or think about, you know, that future. I believe Model 1 would work in the city, but it's going to take us, we're going to have to do things differently, including the city, right? We can market this. I don't know if the city of Brooklyn Park has ever been to any of the development conferences, the National Development Council, like ICSC in Vegas, which is held every May. These international developers come in, and I mean, I don't know how many cities are there presenting their project to all these developers. We have to market, get out to them, and not wait for someone to come to us. We have to get to those. So set aside a budget to send the staff to some of those conferences so that we can make this dream come true. In addition to that, again, a lot of rooftop spaces, we can make those green. We could, even on these developments, and make it public, on top of the roofs for fireworks or, whatever it is. So there are innovative ways that we can think to not only get the revenue we need to offset some of those infrastructure costs like, fire and police, but do some wonderful things to make it a downtown and a destination for a lot. So.
I think it's imperative that city council goes on that trip to Vegas as well.
You should.
I got it.
You wouldn't see, believe how many
water fountain.
You wouldn't believe how many cities up there marketing there. If you will, EDA.
Yeah, I agree.
May I ask if the consulting company they consider how the traffic of this? Yeah, we have this 610 beside, and we only have one exit to here. So if you go model one, you have like 5,000 houses. So that's if every house two people driving or one people. That's 10,000 people. So think about how the traffic going, because people go to Minneapolis and go to the other side, mostly go on this way, 610. So this one part, I don't know if the consultant company already calculated the time they will delay how the old resident stay here.
Commissioner, you appreciate the question. I neglected to mention that when we were going through the engagement summary, as you noted, there were certainly concerns raised about traffic. I did ask our city's transportation engineer to take a look at these models and do an analysis. His finding was that for models 1.5 and 1, for the medium density and for the medium high density models, the existing street system around this area could support that level of development without additional investment in the streets. The high density model would likely require some additional changes to the surrounding area. The immediate local area. I mean, you look at the roadways around here. Zane, it's 6 lanes of through traffic with multiple turn lanes. Oak Grove Parkway is 4 through lanes with turn lanes. There's a lot of capacity on those roads for cars. You start to zoom out, as you're suggesting, Commissioner Yu, to the larger regional system, and there's a lot that goes into why is there or is there not stop and go traffic on 610 or 252 or 694 or what have you. It's certainly localized development does play into that, but it's really more about the larger factors at play in the Northwest Metro as a whole. A lot of those cars going by you are coming from places far, far out, and not from local. So there's a long way of saying that we should be okay from a substantive standpoint when it comes to vehicular traffic.
So we will see the model in the future if they are planning.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Happy to share that.
And another thing is, there will be the train, the light rail. There will be another adding 5 stations in the Brooklyn Park. And I think many people from this area will go to the Target. So I think the train station will around the Target, North Camp, that area. So many people will walking from here, or I don't know, walking or biking or driving to the other side to go to the light rail. Mm-hmm. So did traffic department or concerned about this? Because I live just behind this caribou. So I don't want people in the morning, so 300 people walking through our living area, go to the other side of the station to take the light rail.
I think, Commissioner, the level of analysis that's been done so far, you know, isn't at that granular level to, you know, identify specific origins of destinations that people will be going to. But I think you're absolutely right that, you know, if we're successful here, that will be a desire line that people who live here have. They're going to want to get over to light rail station. So we do need to be cognizant of making sure those options are there. You know, that's something we're advocating for with Metro Transit when it comes to providing those east-west bus connections to all five stations, including Oak Grove, and, you know, also making sure that we have those multimodal connections for bikes, pedestrians, scooters, everything else.
That was by this
time, when this is built, we'll all be in shared vehicles. So you'll be able to go right out and pick whatever Mercedes you want to drive. I mean, cars aren't going to be affordable.
Or
fine. Yeah, they're not affordable these days, just ordinary cars. So shared vehicles are.
Yeah, then you have to construct the structure.
And I just want to reemphasize my concerns specifically about transportation from East District residents getting to take advantage of these particular, and or visitors to our community to access all of these amenities within our city, that I think is a key point of getting them transported through our city, even from a light rail into our cities. If they come to make a stop, how do they get into the city to take advantage of those resources that we have, or amenities that we do have, because everybody's not going to have a bike. And everybody not going to walk, depending on where they're coming from. So a high point to me is, again, that transportation today as well as in the future of how we transport our residents from east and west and central to take advantage of the city today as well as the Jetson project we got right here, George Jetson project.
So hopefully when something like this is finally built, BLRT is on the way or done or close, and that will be a justification for east to west, because we've been told if those are built out, then Metro will build that east to west transit system for us. However, they've indicated that they're not interested in doing that currently because they don't feel the justification is there for traffic. Now, we'll continue to petition and lobby and everything else like we've been doing, but my understanding is that if we execute on that light rail, east to west transportation will be there in the form of bus routes.
Or maybe we learn the model from Japan. You know, we use the subway or the skyway.
We would really need to increase our lobbying budget to
that's how the rail in Japan, yeah. You know, very community very popular, everybody like to use the public transportation because parking in Japan is very expensive, and they want to save gas, environment, and they enjoy like walking in the subway or in the skyway that didn't interfere with other privacy or property.
I'm from Chicago, so we have the L.
Yes. Same.
Yes, and the L is used quite. Oh, did you want to say something?
Traffic.
Yeah. Sorry. So L is used quite a bit, but that was in the days where you didn't.
I'm just reading through some of the comments and feedback that AD's thing that was probably. But one of the things I see is most all of these things is we can sit here and all talk about it and see the difference. We'll never know it until it is on the ground. Is it something that we really want in order to uplift our city? And they would, when you look at the same things that happen in other places and how it's improved. One of the examples that our trip we had out the other day, I think there was a comment the man that was carrying it from, made that when they initially was trying to build those places, majority of the people were against it because, one, they complain about traffic, they complain about different people from different cities, the mixture will bring a whole lot of trouble, will bring ups and downs. But when the question, I think you asking the question, said, what have you seen since they've been, where all of these things you're talking about, are they happening now? And even the community now today is happy with what those construction brought to that community, because it brought more development, it brought more income, tax base. And so when we talk about, I think Brooklyn Park is a lot more open even than St. Louis Park, especially where they have those construction. That was any place, if any place is closed on that Excelsior Boulevard, you would never think that there was building would fit in that particular place, because why? It was already congested before they even put a building there. Mm-hmm. But it just opened up the sidewalks a little bit. That was the only difference there. I saw that the sidewalks just for people to be able to walk back and forth. And so I think we can sit here and debate our people. Some of the comments I read here, they were very, very helpful. Because they don't want this, a lot of mixture of diversity will bring trouble, will bring this, and whatnot. And I think people are missing a point. The city is a big place now. I don't care what you do, it's not going to go back into the 1940s. The city, this Brooklyn Park, is a big city now. The population has grown. And so how do we serve the population that we have and encourage other people to come? So let's look at the positive and hope. I think we all can work together and try to eliminate the bad that may happen. But we can't say that we're gonna just tighten it up and say, okay, let's close it, let's not build this, let's not do this. We gotta grow with the community. That's how I see it. Thank you.
Paul, I don't know if you was aware.
Good people, go home.
Speaking to Councilman Lee's point about the trash, does St. Louis Park have the, are they city trash? They have a service or they contract them?
Yeah, Constable Morrison, I don't know for sure, but it's pretty uncommon for cities to collect the trash of, you know, large commercial and multifamily buildings. That's usually handled on a private basis. So I would imagine that's the case there. I think where the important takeaway there, I think, was just the design of those spaces to make sure that there is a place for the trash collection that is out of the way and accommodates the needs of the trash haulers, but also to Councilmember Lee's earlier point, isn't such a big noticeable facility that it impedes pedestrian traffic. If there's kind of a balance that needs to happen.
Because I just remember they were saying that was a problem in Rarity. Yeah, so.
Yeah, they didn't accommodate for it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I also mentioned the same thing with about trash. And one of the things that, innovation, right? I actually did my overseas study in Japan. There's a city in it was Hashinjuku, that it was a fairly new city back then. What I thought was so very unique is that all their homes and businesses had vacuums that went directly to the street and then vacuumed right to a landfill. That landfill produced methane gas, which powered all the residents' homes. So it was a sustainable way of doing business. Now, here in the U.S., we have an issue with methane gas. We'll have to get around that, but I think we can think out of the box, and we should think out of the box on how do you manage such a dense area in an innovative way and a sustainable way.
Can't afford it. Councilmember Lee.
Thanks, Mayor. I love that idea. Also, rain capture,
composting. So you also mentioned some of the green rooftops, maybe even having a rooftop like pathway or something. Right? But I also wanted to ask, do we consider two-level retail spaces?
I appreciate that question, Councilmember Lee. That when you look at the details in the models, I don't know how clear it is, but you'll see that it looks like they're two-story spaces. It's modeled that way for the purposes of the software because retail space is actually one story, but one functional story. But retail spaces are taller right. than residential spaces. So it's really, those in these models, those seven-story buildings are like six plus, actually, for the purposes of the modeling. You know, that's different from how are we going to choose to regulate and have, you know, like a maximum height or whatever. But in these models, that's what that is.
Because I think we need to be creative, you know, as well, in terms of creating different spaces, right? Like, I don't want all this retail space to just be like, you know, like, you have to walk in from the inside, and then they're just like little storefronts, you know? And I think if we can build something that's more, maybe we need like one or two anchor spaces, right, that are bigger for larger experiences. You know, maybe we need to build more like indoor facilities. Maybe we need to increase the levels, right? So that way there's a first floor and a second floor, right? So that there's some height involved in terms of the ceiling space. So those are the kind of things I'd like to see in terms of like the creativity of the retail space, right? It's not just here's a bunch of stores you can walk down and explore. I mean, there is going to be some of that, but then there's like some of these other more creative experiences as well for retail.
Can I ask one more question? Was there ever a proposal to go even higher and not so wide? I mean, I have a friend who lives in a cruise ship, as she calls it, in Denver, and it's a very tall building, but it has everything you can imagine in it, including a pool on a certain floor and, you know, workspace and all this kind of stuff, but it doesn't take up so much space, and then there's green space around it where you're still getting your density, but you're not, you know, you're not taking it. So I was just curious. I joined this group, you know, just recently, so is that ever proposed?
So, Commissioner Bohr, for the purposes of this study, no. That doesn't mean it can't be talked about, but I'll tell you the thinking behind why we max out of seven stories in these models. So first of all, just to reiterate what I think you're talking about is this idea. You'll see this in the downtowns of Minneapolis and St. Paul and some of the areas closer to the center of the city and along some of the existing light rail lines where you have their what are called point towers. So there might be like a base that is above ground parking that has an amenity deck on top of that base, you know, with pools and other amenities, and then a tower emanating from that. So, you know, when it cut, that type of development is has a much, much higher construction cost, and then of course has to command much higher sale prices and rents that tend only to be achievable in the places in a region that are already the densest and already the most amenity packed. Doesn't mean it's impossible here in the long term future, but it's, you know, very unlikely to be something that works in the marketplace in the shorter term. But you know, that doesn't mean it can't be allowed or considered. So, yeah.
What
do you
think,
25, 30?
I think it's. Yeah, and it's high, and it looks over a golf course, and it's beautiful. But they call it their cruise ship. They live in a cruise ship, a vertical cruise ship, and it's packed with people, young people, and it's very vibrant. It's all got dogs, and they won't walk, and they have paths all around it. But it just struck me when you were talking about the uniqueness, and how do you preserve the space around it to be green but have the density? It's like, well, I don't know. I just thought I'd ask if you ever thought about it.
I wanted to mention, as you mentioned that, Paul, the height of the first floor of the structures of the businesses, and then that means the height that we develop would only benefit certain businesses that require that and eliminates others. Saying that, it leads me into saying, are we or have we put mindsets around targeted businesses to occupy any of those spaces that would require the high level of those particular spaces and ceilings and all those type of things to be considered who we can go out and invite and say we've provided an opportunity that meets your needs and this, that, or the other for those particular businesses.
So, Mayor Winston, Commissioner, or Councilmember Morrison, I think that's, with your permission, Mayor, I'll use it as a segue to this, to the next part, because it's actually quite germane to this. You know, this. So, with that example of, you know, what types of businesses would we seek to be in a development like this? What types of decisions might we make about design details of the development to accommodate those businesses? You know, I would put that in the category of decisions, important decisions for later, that also depend on what is the city's role in all of this to begin with, okay? So there's two roles that the city can play here. You know, one is we have to set a baseline from a regulatory standpoint. What are the rules, okay? So what, you know, a private developer comes, you know, we don't own everything as the city, right? In this case, the EDA owns the couple of properties in the northern part of those 43 acres. But the vast majority of it is privately owned, and the vast majority of development that happens in this and every other city is through the private market. So that's one role we have, is to regulate what the private market is going to do and decide what is the minimum level we're willing to accept from developers in the private market. And then there's the additional consideration of, are we going to be proactively investing in this area? And how does that work in conjunction with all of the other geographic areas around the state that we're interested in investing in? So that, you know, that second part gets to what I think Councilmember Morrison is talking about, and is, for now, a decision that we don't have to make, but eventually will have to be made. What's in front of us right now, just with the tight timeline of the moratorium, we got to have regulations in place before the moratorium expires on November 5th. So we have some important near-term decisions that aren't going to deal with everything we've talked about, but they're more about what is the minimum we're willing to accept from the private market. Okay, so just kind of playing out what's ahead in the coming weeks and months in terms of decisions. Next month, we will be bringing forward to the Planning Commission and to the City Council a proposed amendment to the comprehensive plan. Think of this as general guidance or a bridge between the models we've been looking at and the zoning rules, which will come shortly after that. Okay. That will be in October, the zoning regulations. So the zoning regulations are the specific rules to be applied when we're reviewing development proposals from, you know, mostly from the private market. And as I said, a key decision will be what's the minimum intensity of development that we will accept. And then after the moratorium expires, that's when we start getting into these, you know, discussions about relative priority to other parts of the city and, you know, what's the plan going to be for proactive investment in this area and all those other areas. So kind of two or three stages of decision making there. So that's getting into the third and last piece that I wanted to go through tonight, which is the current staff thinking on the approach to changing the comprehensive plan to accommodate this change in thinking and the work that's been done on these models with the goals of the moratorium in mind. So on the left for this area is what's currently shown in the comprehensive plan. This is the future land use map that's in the comprehensive plan. On the right is what we're currently thinking in terms of changing that map to reflect this conversation. So right now, if we're looking north of 610 and in the area we've been discussing with these models, you know, this color, this pink, light red color is commercial only, okay? So housing would not be, is not currently allowed in those places. This is, and then the orange here is a medium high density residential designation, which allows a certain level of residential, but not as much as what we're talking about in those medium high and high density models, okay? So it's, you know, it's segregated uses. You can't have mixed use either vertically or horizontally. It's all segregated. So this is essentially what that business as usual model is showing. We do have already in the comprehensive plan, in kind of the menu of options, a mixed use category that allows vertical mixed use. So it allows, you know, housing on top of retail, like we've been talking about. It allows retail only, it allows housing only, it's very flexible, it allows office, hotels, all sorts of things. It does not require the development to be done in a mixed-use fashion, but it allows it, okay? So that is applied down here in what's called the Astor Village area between 93rd and 610. It's applied in the Oak Grove Station area and a couple of other places. So the proposal here is that we would expand the area where the mixed-use designation is applied to include most of what we've been talking about, as well as a few other areas. Anything here that's outlined in black is a change from the current comprehensive plan. We'll come back to this map in a minute, but in addition to proposing changes to the map, in order to achieve all that we've been talking about so far, we would need to make some substantive changes to what that mixed-use designation means in the first place, because right now it doesn't get to the level that we've been talking about. So in looking to summarize the approach that we're proposing here, just to level set on what are the types of things we can regulate as a city when it comes to new development, it's really three main things. It's scale of buildings, it's the uses that go into those buildings, and it's the design of the buildings and the surrounding streets and the site and so on. Okay, so in each of those, talk a little bit about each of those categories. So this is all going to be, we're going to walk through what we established are seeing as the main objectives that have been coming out of this work. So one of those objectives is we want to make sure that we're allowing the scale of buildings necessary to achieve the council's goal of increasing the value of development. The current guidance that we have on that question of scale in the medium, in the mixed use category of the comprehensive plan is pretty vague. It just says medium to large scale, and then it doesn't define what that means, okay? So if we get a proposal for a seven-story development, is that consistent? I'm not quite sure. The proposal here is to just be really clear about that and put a number in there that, you know, right now we're thinking based on these models that we would put a number in there in the comprehensive plan that says in the mixed-use district or in the mixed-use category, there's a maximum of seven stories. Also on the topic of scale, we want to make sure, so you know, if this is the maximum, we also want to ensure that individual parcels and the area as a whole are not underdeveloped, which would be counter to the council's goal of increasing value. The current guidance on this subject of, you know, kind of a minimum level of development in that mixed-use category in the comprehensive plan is not. We don't have any guidance on that. So the proposal then is we would say in the comprehensive plan that the city will establish minimum development intensity standards to ensure the efficient use of land. Okay, in the comprehensive plan itself, we wouldn't get to the point of saying precisely what that minimum is. That will come very shortly after when we propose the actual zoning for this area, okay? But right now, the tool that we're most likely to propose to you all in October for regulating the minimum amount of development is to have a minimum floor area ratio. So we have a nice graphic that our intern Holly has put together at the bottom here that illustrates what that concept means. It's essentially floor area ratio is the total floor area of the building divided by the area of the property it's on. gets you a number. So in this example, we have two stories of building that occupy a quarter of the site. You do that math and you get to a floor area ratio of 0.5, okay? If you were to double that and have four stories in that corner of the site, you'd have a floor area ratio of 1.0, okay? So we will establish some sort of number that is a minimum amount of development that from a regulatory standpoint that we would accept. Okay, and then finally on the subject of scale, this is, and then we'll move on to the other two. We need to make sure that we allow enough residential density in terms of the number of units per acre to support the envisioned scale of development. This is something that cities are required to provide guidance on in their comprehensive plans. This is something that the Met Council is looking at for a whole bunch of reasons. And we need to up, in order to achieve this level of density that we're talking about really in any of these models, we're going to have to increase that units per acre. Okay. On to the subject of scale, onto land use. The objective here is that we want to allow a wide range of uses, including high-density residential, retail, service, office, and restaurants. The current guidance that we have for the mixed-use designation in the comprehensive plan right now is pretty good on this topic already. It allows that list that you see under current guidance. What we would propose to do is simply to add a few uses to that list just to be clear about the intent and also to respond to what we've heard from you all, and from the community in the engagement about the desired mix of uses here. So we would add medical, hospitality, and recreation to that existing list of high-density residential, retail, service, office, and restaurants.
Quick question,
Paul. We would ensure that the zoning regulations allow all of those things in council members.
Yeah. How would a museum fall into any of that at all?
I think that's in the spirit of that list of cultural destinations, but we can take that as feedback to I think that's within recreation, sure, yeah.
Oh, okay, I was looking somewhere else, okay. Thank you.
You know, I think just a quick aside on that, I think what's most important here is what is excluded from this list. So it's not industrial, it's not business park style development. It's kind of everything else that you would see in the city. Yeah. Another land use objective, and this is an important discussion point. So ensure that retail is included in this particular area along Xylon, as has been shown in those models. Okay. And on future walkable streets in other areas of the city where the mixed-use category is applied. So right now, as I mentioned before, the mixed-use category allows mixed-use, but it doesn't require it. We wouldn't want to require it absolutely everywhere the mixed-use category is put down on the map, because that would be unrealistic. We're not going to get retail covering everything that's purple on the comprehensive plan map. However, if we're really judicious about where we do require it, that's something that we can do. So the proposed way of dealing with that in the comprehensive plan is to just put a simple red dotted line on those priority places. We're proposing to call it a pedestrian priority street. And in those places, within the mixed use category, any development proposal that comes forward would be required to have retail space facing those streets.
Just a quick comment. I recall talking to you about, I can't remember what city it was, but there was some patience involved with filming some of those retail locations, right? It wasn't built and they were automatically filled in. The model kind of, the density kind of got there and then over time.
Can I interrupt? What was that word you said? There was some what?
I have no idea.
Patience.
I don't know why you're pointing that out. But.
I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, patience. Okay. I thought you were asking me, but never mind. I think you were saying it would require some patience from them to kind of let the different, the appropriate retail, I guess, fill in those spots. Because at one point it was, for one of them you showed me, it was Big Box there for a while, and then Big Box or some kind of said no. And then it got filled in with local businesses that had been pretty stable. over that time.
Right. That was the Pan American development that we all went to in Bloomington in the Southtown area, where we were looking at that one mixed-use building kind of across the street from the Fresh Time store. And right now, all of those retail spaces are occupied by primarily mom and pop style local businesses. Whereas when it first opened up, as the mayor mentioned, it was all national chains, and they didn't actually succeed in that location for whatever reason. Then they got re-tenanted with local businesses. And there's been similar jostling over the last 20 years in the Telstream brand too, and a fair amount of turnover in those spaces, and some of them have been tough to lease. Mm-hmm.
Isn't there a fair amount of West End that's still empty when you come in from the south?
Yeah,
it's all just tarps of paper over the windows. It's been like that for years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on the south end, that's right.
I think one of the important things, just to, along the lines of what you're talking about, what we hear from national chain types of retailers is that they are looking for a specific type of business location, and they often don't desire to be in these mixed-use buildings. And so that's what we've seen proven out in these examples that you're just sharing, that if they can be elsewhere, they will be elsewhere. Or they will maybe try it and then, find something that works better with their business model. They have kind of pre-canned business strategies, and they're trying to kind of plop them down and recreate them over and over again. So the more tailored businesses do what better in these types of facilities.
So, yeah, given that we're talking about this now, maybe this would be a good time to ask a question that you're going to ask in a bit. Maybe we'll just get to it now. Along those lines that Kim is talking about, if we require retail along this frontage on Zion, and we also require that it be in a mixed-use building, that there be other stuff on top of it, most likely residential, that is very likely to take some time for the marketplace to happen, and it could take a very, very long time. So something that we've been thinking is, would we be willing to accept a larger development, say on the Meyer one here, that has single-story retail, kind of like that center photo of Main Street and Maple Grove, that is designed in a way that is conducive to pedestrians and does all of those good things, but doesn't have... isn't multi-story, as long as we then hold the rest of the site to a high level of intensity to contribute to the resultant property value and property taxes. So think like, everything you see here, except the buildings immediately aligning Zion, are just retail. Could probably still achieve the overall goal of increasing value, but might be more successful in the short term at attracting the retail the folks are looking for. Looking for feedback on that question. We, the staff, think that's a pretty reasonable way of doing it, but we want to ask it.
Do we know why the larger chains are not successful in mixed use areas?
And I'm looking to you to see if you have a really good answer to that.
Well, I think ultimately anything that complicates their business delivery is something they don't want to deal with. So, you talked about trash. All of a sudden trash gets more complicated because you've got people living above you. The noise, the smells, there's like different things for different types of businesses.
Shipping and receiving.
Yeah. So for me, yes, delivery is a big part. Oh, you're delivering something at 6 a.m, I live above you. So those conflicts just get to be more. It's kind of why zoning started from the beginning, where we were separating commercial from residential. So, I think the chains over time have just concluded that it's easier to find single level. They'll do it in certain conditions, but it's rare that they will. I mean, we have a few examples in suburban communities where you're seeing a chain like Trader Joe's under housing. But that's, that particular location is one of the hottest locations in the region in terms of traffic counts and purchasing and power and everything. So something can never happen. It's just, if we want to attract retail here.
There also has to be parking. When you look at Arbor Lakes, they opened up their streets because you couldn't get all the way through, and they have parking right in front of each one, which is counterintuitive to what we were talking about here, but.
These national retailers know us that we know, we even know ourselves. They know us better. They know our buying habits. They know everything about us. And I know that the first thing that comes to their mind that they always look at first is crime, right? And so we have to change that narrative before, even if you build all of this, if we don't change that, they will still won't come. And then second, they also understand in the Brooklyn Park what they consider, they call it house poor, right? That most of our income go toward, you know, our housing, and therefore you're not spending money out in the restaurants and things of that nature. So we have to, as a city, change that, you know, as well. They love the density, right? Density of housing and everyone, if all those other metrics are there. Low crime and, you know, the income, discretionary. And then you can get just about any kind of retail to come, including trade clothes.
Yeah. And these corporations have developed their business over a period of time, so they know the image and look that they want as well, too. So,
sorry, just to close out, I think I would be okay with that. Again, if they're able to offer a creative space and work with the guidelines around which we want to build that area. So, but yeah, it would depend on what they bring to the table. But yeah, I would go with that.
I should have probably highlighted the more important ones, which is like visibility, branding, and ease of ingress. In and out. How fast can my customers get in and out? Which means where can they park? And how close is the door to the parking?
Yeah.
I will go that way. Get in and out.
So I also think, though, that it's an opportunity. Brooklyn Park, I do think, is different in some way in that we do have people who are willing to, entrepreneurs who are willing to take risks. And if we continuously say we want to have this cultural corridor, we cannot ignore, traditional, I forget what we call them, restaurants or the big box restaurants. Or what do we call them? They're not big box.
Chains.
Yeah. I think we have to have a mixture of change, but I also think we have to find a way to, and we're doing, some of our businesses are doing that already, right? But we also have to find a way to encourage some of the, I don't want to say ethnic because we're majority minority. So,
both?
Yeah.
Not changing.
Yeah, some of these unique restaurants, right? Some of them could probably move into a bigger place when it's built. But I also think we need to lean into that competitively because I think chains will do well to a certain extent. But I also don't think we carve out any competitive advantage if we are mostly chained in Brooklyn Park. There's other places that are maybe more convenient that people know about. It's not necessarily a natural strength or differentiator. So I think you have to have the chains because people want chains. But you also have to build up that cultural diversity. Like, so if an Adidas continues to grow, okay, we'll give you a bigger space. Mama T's is struggling a bit, right? But if we can find some way to get them stabilized, I think that'd be a place that people would visit. I think we have to kind of also begin looking in that direction as well. So some of these places. So I guess my point, and I'm not helping you with this at all, Paul, is that I'm open to, yes, if we need to have it one floor, or if mixed use, right? Because I think we can, given our composition as the city, we can find a way to make both work, right? But I think we have to keep that in mind, that diversity is going to be key, and that would be a reason that someone from Champlain Park would come visit is because I can't get this anywhere else, right? Maple Grove would come here because I can't get this. They can get chains in Maple Grove to the room of the, you know, place, but they can't come yet. They can't get Mama T's. They can't get, they can't get Nadia's, they can't get a lot of these different restaurants, Angelo's and Cali Taco and these different places, it's just, you're not going to get that in any world. So we have to be aware of that as we build this out too. So that didn't help you at all. But I think we have some options strategically just because of the larger strategy of differentiating ourselves, and keep that in mind.
One more objective is ensuring that new development, and we talked about this already, but ensuring that new development and street connections support a walkable environment. Again, currently in that mixed-use exit designation, there's no discussion of that. That it seems very clear from the discussion we've had at this table, as well as from all the public engagement, that there is a strong desire that we have that style of development, not just at our station areas. That's already in place in policy at station areas, but in other parts of the city as well, in the parts that are remaining to be developed. So the proposed, what we're proposing to do with this category, mixed-use category in the comprehensive plan as it relates to that is require that for new buildings, there be a traditional neighborhood design with buildings close to the street and plenty of windows. And then also for new streets, require a walkable block size. So what that means is making sure that you don't have these huge super blocks that you can't actually traverse on foot. And then the design of the streets themselves that promotes pedestrian safety and comfort, including ample sidewalk width, landscaping, street furniture, etc. And then so we have, you know, some nice examples of what that looks like out in the real world. And then also on the bottom left here, just to illustrate that this concept of walkable street, walkable block sizes is not new to the discussion of Brooklyn Park. That this is the Oak Grove station area plan and already plans for, as the streets are built out in that area, walkable block sizes and then having those super blocks. So that concludes the proposed overall approach to the comprehensive plan. As I said, we'll be bringing forward the details of this for consideration by the Planning Commission and the City Council next month. And then what happens after that is we submit the amendment itself to the Metropolitan Council for their review. Just a couple more things, and then I'll be done talking at you. Just wanted to illustrate, you know, for both the regulatory decisions we're about to make, as well as the, you know, proactive investment decisions that come farther down the road, there are trade-offs that you're all well aware of. I've heard you all talking about them. We've been talking about them at this table now for a few months. And but the reason I want to just highlight this again right now is, again, with that step that's coming in October of determining a number for that minimum floor area ratio, you know, what's the least amount of development. It's kind of, you know, it's not fun to talk about it that way. We have all these big grand visions, and then we have to talk about, well, what's the least we'll accept. Okay, but we do have to figure that out from a regulatory standpoint. You know, the higher we set that bar for the minimum, you know, the good things are more tax revenue, more green space and other amenities, more population to support the retail and restaurants. But then on the negative side, you know, there's longer it'll take to fulfill the vision. If you set the minimum floor area ratio really high, you know, to match that Model 1 high density, you know, maybe nothing will happen for a really long time. So that, you know, that's kind of a trade-off that we have to be really to accept if we were to go that high. And of course, there's more subsidy, more city services, all that kind of stuff. So definitely not here to propose a number. I don't know what we're going to propose, but we're working through that right now. A lot of these questions that we've posed here for the purposes of discussion, I think we've really touched on already, but definitely open the mayor's discretion to any more discussion about that. But before we do that, I do want to just highlight this last one and go back to the extent, now that we've gone through the proposed substantive changes to the mixed-use category, I want to look back again at the map of where we would propose to put that category. And the reason I want to go back here is just a reminder that this whole exercise that we've been doing, we've been focusing on know, this area here, which is the so-called Meyer land and the EDA land, but we've been using that as a case study for the larger 610 Zane area identified in the scope for this work. Just to point out the other places where we would propose to put this district, okay, so or the, this category, and there's two kinds of places. There are places that are already developed, that already have something on the ground. So like here's Park Place Promenade with Cub Foods and various businesses. What this would afford them in that area is if those property owners wanted to do more, they wanted to add some housing or add some other things, office, hotels, whatever, they would have more flexibility to do more, okay? We would also, you know, we're also showing here on the street here between the Cub and the Park Place Promenade strip mall to call that a pedestrian priority street. So, you know, if say there was a proposal to build some housing on the outskirts of the Cub parking lot, you know, have that have some retail on the first floor facing that street, okay? And then south of, so that's category one is properties that are already developed. Category two is we still have some other vacant properties that are outside of the area we've been talking about for all of them. So just to point out what those are, there is this site or this site? This site that's vacant? There's a vacant site here, there's a vacant site here, and there's a vacant site here, okay? So all of those would be subject to all these same things that we've just been talking about in the amended mixed use category. Of those, there's really only one that would be newly in the mixed use category, and that's this one, this here next to the Taco Bell Defy. This is the property owned by Ryan. So just wanted to make sure I pointed that out. Any feedback questions on that?
Especially from our planning commission, because you know, get you in front of us.
And again, this is just right now. There's no this location. Nothing on Brooklyn.
Right. The proposed comprehensive would not at this point affect. Yeah.
Okay.
That although that is already guided for what's called neighborhood mixed use, which is actually you know follows a lot of the same principles that we've been talking about already.
Different discussion in terms of finding out for those land, for the EDA land that we control, how are we going to come up with the comprehensive approach?
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit different discussion for that.
And the EDA control, that's only because the adjacencies are residential right now. And you don't want to do mixed use of the, where, yeah.
Oh, I see, like why isn't this desert shown as mixed use?
Right.
You know, I think the thinking there is the focus on those sites is housing. You're starting to get pretty far away from the center of gravity here when it comes to retail.
Great walkable sidewalk.
It wouldn't be developed to those same like design standards, sure. But yeah, it wouldn't. As proposed, it would allow housing only in that other non-residential.
Well, the other factor about commercials that when we studied this area multiple times over the years, and one of the things that when we sat down with a number of different commercial brokers, they emphasized that the right, that red land on the right side, that is like the premier place for retail. But, you know, maybe there could be an argument that first site just to the north that's shown in brown there could be a mixed use designation because there that might be another site where a retailer might want to go, but keeping the retail from
retailers like Four Corners, right?
Yeah.
You know, so any corner.
Yeah.
Any further comments?
If it's okay if I just point out one other thing that just from knowing what the development community has brought to us in the past, it is likely that as we allow, because right now if you look at the map, we have a lot of commercially zoned land. So right now that means all that stuff in pink there is you cannot build housing on those sites. So what we're doing here is opening up the opportunity for people to build housing. And so we will likely see that happen on these sites that have formerly been zoned commercial. Because one of the things that I've heard planners say about, you know, land use types is that the housing grows kind of like weeds. Like it'll grow anywhere. How people will live anywhere. But retailers are like orchids, they only want to be in certain locations and they have to have the perfect conditions to succeed. So what that happens then is that there's more demand for housing construction than retail construction. So if we open up opportunity for more housing, we'll see more housing.
Retail is just so demanding. I get it. They gotta be seen, so they gotta be.
Yeah.
One last question. Is there any timeline for the completion of this project? Are we looking at any timeline to
2030,
whatever?
I was thinking
end of the
year.
For the development.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, no matter what we do, it's going to take a substantial amount of time for all of this to be built up. I would hesitate to say what it's going to be.
Can you tell us where is the fix of land between the West Bond Way and Brooklyn Boulevard and the kind of wildlife?
Excuse me, I'm sorry, what was the last part?
The piece of land at the Brooklyn Boulevard, where is on the map?
This is just showing the area north of 93rd, so you know, Brooklyn Boulevard is off the map. For this work, we're not proposing any changes to the Brooklyn Boulevard area. We're aware that there's a lot of interest on the council in taking a look at Brooklyn Boulevard, but right for this is just in this area.
For moratorium purposes.
For the moratorium, yes.
One more thing. I know you did a drive road study or have been that it would suffice as is, mm-hmm. but living in the neighborhoods, you're there in the yellow, perhaps, like I do, people are already cutting through neighborhoods, driving quite quickly to get to 610 or, you know, finding their ways. Mm-hmm. How do you go about asking the city to do studies for stop signs or whatnot? Because I live on a new thoroughfare that's a quick trip went up. Then they cut through to get to 610 without getting on scene. And it's dangerous. So I'm just curious. That's just with what we have now. Would local neighborhoods be able to do traffic studies to see if there could be additional stop signs or safety measures?
I'm not sure what the request process is for.
Jump in.
Yeah.
So typically a request goes to the city engineer. That study comes back to whoever's requested it. Ultimately, depending on where it comes back, it could then come before the council and potentially be approved.
So like put it in the stop sign?
Yeah, so if you have a request, you could reach out to me or the city engineer and we could get a study done. It's it happens quite frequently, honestly.
So. Very fast question. Where can we find the mixed-use definition? On the website somewhere?
Oh, the current definition?
Yeah, the mixed use. So here's the color with mixed use. What's the exact definition of it?
So the current definition is in the current comprehensive plan. I'd be happy to send out a link on that. And next month when we come forward with the actual comprehensive plan amendment, what we will be proposing is changes to that text. So you'll see both side by side in that report, but I'm happy to send it out before the meeting.
Oh, sweet. All right, any other? Okay. Well, thank you, Paul, and then thank you, Planning Commission, again, for taking the time to come out. And thank you for the input. I think we've learned quite a bit from what you bring to the table. So I appreciate it. And the council, of course, thank you for sticking in there. This is a little bit elongated meeting, but I think it needed to happen. So thanks, everybody. Thank you. Oh, and then I don't have a gavel, but we need adjourned.
You just put it on the table.
So, quick question.